The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So underrated. Radio
X. Thank you very much for downloading the Evening Show podcast. I'm Gordon Smart and producer Joe is on duty.
I am on duty.
Thanks, Joe, for taking the reins.
Not at all, mate.
It's always appreciated. And thank you very much for listening as well. Some good stuff for you. Tom Smith from the editors on the podcast. He's a busy boy. The new album Violence came out this year. He's about to go out on tour. He is married to a famous DJ and TV presenter and has two children.
Facts with Gordon Smart.
Well, right, yeah. That'd be a better name for the podcast. Given my previous employment, might not work. I've also got John Niven on the show, who is my favourite author, probably. Might just about edge Irvine Welsh out of the way and be my favourite. Kill Your Friends, have you read it, Joe?
I haven't. I know you're going to tell me off because you've told me to read it before, and I haven't, but I will.
The Amateurs, have you read that?
I haven't.
No Good Deed, have you read that?
No.
Danny Wallace, your talent that you're on with before me on a Sunday.
Yeah.
He is quoted on the front of his book.
I've read Danny's books.
You're getting closer. John Niven's always a brilliant guest. He's a total rascal. Used to play in a wedding band with Manic Street Preachers. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
There's another little fact for you. And I've got two classic albums because there was no podcast last week. We've got Californication by Red Hot Chili Peppers from 1999 and Mondays from Paul Weller, Wildwood, which is 25 years old, I think, now.
I'm not going to argue with you.
1993, yes, 25 years old, quarter of a century. Unbelievable. And it's still a great album. Sunflowers on there, Wildwood, of course, as well. And there's a deluxe edition that came out in 2007 that was expensive. That's an Evening Show podcast. I hope you enjoy.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
It's 6 months since we last saw the man sitting in front of me. 7 million sales to his name. He's on his sixth album. It's called Violence. And he is Tom Smith from Editors. Tom, you look exactly the same, which is a good sign.
Yes, are you? I mean,
I was hoping you'd be battle weary and tired and broken and all
I'm
that.
I'm a bit tired, but yeah, what have we been doing since then? We've toured, done a load of festivals, and yeah, it's been good.
The last time we saw you, you were talking about when you were writing the album, you don't always know what the songs mean when you're writing them. Do you get to understand what they're about as you perform them, people react to them?
Yeah, you get to understand what they mean to other people, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, people might, you know, fans might talk to you about certain things or certain, you realise what lyrics, you know, resonate.
Yeah.
So that becomes apparent after a while, and sometimes it's not what you expect. The fourth record was a big surprise in somewhere like Italy for us, and I remember like thinking, why did people here get this on a deeper level than, you know, anywhere else?
I find that really, really interesting. Like, I remember seeing Paul McCartney playing in Germany, in Cologne, and he did Obd Obd Da, and everyone went mental. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was with a Geordie guy, and Let It Be came on, and we were up singing, nobody else was getting into it. But I love that intricacy of the...
Maybe it's a slight umpa nature of...
It must be.
Pulls on the roots.
Looking back at this album, though, it's called Violence. How do you feel that it's gone the last 6 months when you've been playing it live?
It's felt good. I mean, I really, really enjoyed playing the title track this summer. It's been real, you know, because that song's quite confrontational. It's quite different from the first gig we did in the UK over the summer. We were doing a festival. Noel Gallagher was headlining. It was up in Manchester, where I can't remember what it was called. Neighbourhood Weekend.
Yeah.
And we're playing in a tent. I'm never quite sure how it's going to go when you play new songs in that environment, and straight away that song just went off. You know, and obviously they were really excited to hear some of the older songs, but that surprised me. Yeah.
Darkness at the Door magazine, big songs as well. And for the first time last week, we played Cold, which has gone down really well as well.
I mean, it's quite an immediate, you know, despite the title and some of the subject matter, it's immediate, like we talked about before. It's quite poppy, you know, and those type of things work. Yeah. So,
now Tom's feeling a little bit fragile today. Involved a late night in a naughty bar in London, but
you made that sound. It was just a bar.
I was just drinking. But I'm looking
a naughty bar.
A naughty. Well, no, it wasn't one of those naughty bars. It was a metal bar.
Yeah, sure.
I should. That was a bit unfair of me. But we're sitting here looking at a list of tour dates ahead, and your slightly fragile state is an exciting look at those dates, or is it like, oh dear, that could shorten my life by 5 years?
No, I can't wait. It's been a while since we toured properly in the UK, especially. Yeah. So, because we didn't start this record touring in England, in the UK, it does feel like a long time since we've done that. So, we start in Southampton, and I can't wait. Yeah. So there's a lot of, it should be good.
I'm looking through that list of dates, and there's some really special moments on there. The Badlands already sold out, and then finishing at Brixton as well. What is the magic about, say, the Badlands, for instance, for anybody who hasn't been, and also Brixton as well?
Well, Barrowlands, it's a unique concert hall. It doesn't feel like any other one. You know, the layout of it. It's one of those old.
It's quite low, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite low. Everyone's stood, and the kind of got an old sprung floor. And I don't know. Obviously, you know, Scottish crowds are generally great, vibrant, kind of you know, loud and good fun to play to. But that venue, because it's got a low ceiling and the floor's quite bouncy, you get a real atmosphere in there. So we've had a lot of good nights in there over the years. So that's I think it might have been the first to sell out as well. So that. Hopefully that'll be good. And Brixton. I mean, the thing with Brixton is it's a big gig. You know, there's a lot of people in the room, so you get a big atmosphere. But because the floor is kind of, you know, raked, it goes up towards the back, everyone can see. It's grand. It's also a bit dirty and a bit of falling apart a little bit. Yeah. So it's got a good vibe, so it works for rock shows, you know.
I don't know if you'd Liam from The Prodigy recently, and he told us a story about the bass breaking the floor at Brixton Academy.
Breaking the floor. That's an achievement.
It's quite an achievement. Have you ever done any damage?
Our last couple of London shows, the PA has broken for a little while during the show, really badly at Hammersmith on the last record, and it went off again. We did a little like a launch show at Clapham Grand this record, and again it went off a bit in that set as well, so I'm just praying that the sound stays on from start to finish when we're at Brixton.
You learn your stagecraft in those moments.
I'm just an awkward bumbling idiot in those moments. I don't have any stagecraft.
Right, this is the latest single from the album Violence. It's a great album, and this song's a cracker. I went down a tree when we played it for the first time last week. This is Editors and Cold.
You were waiting for an answer.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was Editors and Cold on the Evening Show. Tom Smith is here, looking like a gentleman of rock and roll today. Look like a proper front man, Tom, when you come in here. He's always looked like a rock star. Did you ever wear a tracksuit? And I know the answer to this.
Never the full thing.
Just top.
just bottoms, actually. But I've just been in Rome. Doing some writing with an artist there. He's a violinist, but he always wears tracksuit bottoms, his socks sports socks pulled right up, and like Adidas trainers. Yeah. He looks like he's walked off the streets of Napoli.
Really?
But he's playing the violin. Yeah. Amazing. Like, there's nothing wrong with jogging bottoms.
Listen, it's October, Tom. And when you came in, I had this slight hope that you're going to tell me that there's a Smith and Burrows Christmas magic up your sleeve. Look me in the eye and tell me there's not going to be something.
There's not going to be any Christmas magic. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
But we are going in the studio to record some stuff. So,
oh, brilliant.
But it just isn't festive. It'll be. After this tour, we're going to go and do a song and see how that goes. Yeah. And then we've got an album written that we're going to try to record next year. So.
Oh, phenomenal.
So there'll be some more Smith and Burrows, but the Christmas stuff, that was
not
time and place.
Yeah. there's some of the magic about you two together, I think, you know?
Cool, thank you.
And I think it's called Whiskey.
Of course, yeah.
That gets it going.
Yeah. He's a very dear friend who I love. And we've had a really good time recently writing together, and it's been really creative. And it's exciting.
I can't wait to hear that. Well, remember where you can come when that's all ready to go.
Love to, yeah. I'll be in, definitely.
The pair of you together, you come and we'll have a little drink as well. Now, your music belongs in indie disco sets, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
It's in there every time.
All right.
But if you're DJing, Tom, and I know this happens from time to time.
Oh, it's normally Russell and Elliot the DJ. Sometimes I have to be there, but not often. But
just directing, right? So what is in there as a starter and a finisher on your DJ set that we can take some advice from that has proven to work for you?
Oh, I don't have that much experience, but what could I play? We were talking a lot about the Chemical Brothers last night in the conversation. What was that one off Dig Your Own Hole? Private Psychedelic Reel? Was that the one that worked towards the end of Dig Your Own Hole?
Yes.
That song's amazing. We'll finish with that one.
That works great. An open enough to get everybody up, everybody involved.
You know, a bit of Depeche Mode, maybe.
Gets everybody up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I love the way songs are known by their version. It's horrible.
You don't have to say any more than that with that song, do you? It's a classic. Yeah.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
I'm Gordon Smart, and I'm a fashion correspondent in my spare time. It's a private gig. Anyway, you can hear the clothes show music in the background for anybody who's not of the same vintage as me. And tonight I'm going to turn my attentions to the couture once again of Miles Kane, Merseyside's finest. He's got an album at the moment called Coup de Grasse. That is brilliant. His fashion sense, well, that's over to you. Right now, I'm looking at a picture of him posted on social media recently wearing a black dinner suit with pink lapels and a pink stripe down the side. Now, let me tell you about Miles' description of this outfit. He says, new suit from me in Ray Brown fashion. The suit, pink and black. I'm calling it night vision. Very nice. But tonight, Miles has really excelled himself. He says, new levels of clothing. Bowie Bolan-inspired jumpsuit. New creation from me in Ray Brown fashion. I dare you. He's in Belgium, and that definitely is an outfit for the Belgians. Incredible stuff, Miles K. We love talking about his fashion. A man once seen in a full-on leather suit. Good on you, Miles. You're a braver boy than me. I couldn't get away with that. Just made me feel 38-year-old and beige. Go and check out Miles' picture. They are class.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
Every Monday night, we turn our attention to a band we love here at Radio X. And we thought tonight on Classic Albums, we'd do some Red Hot Chili Peppers. Now, Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out in 91, but we've already done that. So tonight, Californication from June 1999, which is 19 years ago. Can you believe that? And it got me thinking as well, I'd kind of fallen out of love with American bands for a few years because of Britpop between 93 and 94. All the way up into 99, it was all about Oasis and bands like that, Blur, all the rest of it. But this was a little reminder, they are an epic, epic band. So the Chillies also were marking a special time in their career because they were reunited with guitarist John Frusciante. He'd played on Mother's Milk, Blood Sugar Sex Magik as well, and he returned to help create the Chillies' most iconic album. It has sold, get on this, 15 million copies worldwide. Only went to number 3 in America, which is a bit of a surprise, but it has gone platinum in countless countries all across the globe. Now, how about these for tracks? Around the World, the title track, obviously, Other Side, Road Trippin', Grammy Award-winning Scar Tissue, which was also the name of Anthony Kiedis' book. Now, how about John Frusciante as well? I have to give him a big mention. He'd just come out of rehab when this album was made. So there's a real focus to it, a lot more mature. The songs are richer, a lot more melodic as well. And it was a big deal for Anthony Kiedis to be working with him again. And he got more introspective on this album. Plenty of funny, cheeky innuendos, like the early Chili stuff as well. And he sang about bigger themes and darker subjects. The other song that I was going to talk about was Other Side. What a tune that is. References to drug addiction and death, as you would expect, after what John Frusciante had been through and what Anthony Kiedis had been through. The black and white video as well, remember that? Even influenced by German Expressionism. That is a bit of a jump for the Chillies at the time. No socks on appendages at this point. The keyboard player on the album, now recognise this name. Greg Kurstin, who really is man in the moment. Name sounds very familiar because he's just done Liam Gallagher's stuff. He was the producer on the last Foo Fighters album. He's been involved in loads and loads of big tunes that have been out in the last few years. A brilliant musician. He was the keyboard player. So there's a song on the album and it's called Emmett Remus. And I thought I'd finish on this little note because it reminded me of a very good story. That is Summertime Backwards, Emmett Remus. And it was inspired by Anthony Kiedis' relationship with one of the Spice Girls, Mel C. How about that? Sporty Spice. So, two songs from Californication for you on Classic Albums. I've got Californication first, and then the magical Scar Tissue.
The Evening Show, Classic Album of the Week.
X. Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart. Evening Show, Classic Album of the Week.
X.
This week's classic album, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Californication, from June 1999. That's 19 years old. And I just played you Scar Tissue there. What a brilliant song that is. What a way to mark your return to the band as well. John Frusciante, the first single from the album, and a big change in their sound as well. Frusciante opening the song with a mellow, melodic guitar sound and plays slide guitar solos throughout, which are beautiful. And quite rightly, it won the 2000 Grammy for Best Rock Song. Before that, Californication, the title track, the song has been performed over 500 times by the band, an absolute mainstay of any Chili Peppers set you will go and see or hear. Fourth single from the album, and it's about the dark side of Hollywood, which they know plenty about. Exploitation, globalisation, they've got their view on that. Full of cultural references as well. Star Wars, The Beach Boys, David Bowie, Nirvana, Foo Fighters, they all get a mention. Hear that in the background? What a tune. The song you can hear is Parallel Universe. One of the loudest songs the Chillies have ever made, turning the distortion right up to 11. Also notable, no backing vocals. Really rare after John Frusciante rejoined the band. What a tune though. Very loud.
Radio X. Gordon Smart.
Radio. X.
I'm really happy because a man I really admire and respect's coming, and it's Sunday afternoon and he's got all his clothes on, all his own teeth and his own hair. So two Scotsmen in the studio in central London. It's remarkable, really, Niv, that you're standing after this book tour.
It is. We're deep into it now, Gordon. But yeah, we're one more date to go, which is tomorrow, Liverpool.
I should say this is John Niven, author of Kill Your Friends and many other fine books that are available to buy on the internet. So you've been on book tour promoting the latest version of Kill Your Friends. It's called Kill 'Em All.
Yeah, Kill 'Em All, the sequel to Kill Your Friends, which came out 10 years ago now.
Is that 10 years?
10 years, Gordon. Where's that gone?
Yes.
And yeah, we've been on the reading tour for the past week and we finish in Liverpool on tomorrow, Monday
night. And you finish with Manic Street Preachers as well, James Dean Bradford.
Oh, that was Bristol.
Was that Bristol last night? Is that why there's a wee bit of gravel in your lovely Ayrshire pipes, Mr. Niven?
Well, it's been eight days on the road. But yeah, no sleep till Liverpool tomorrow.
So what is the score then when you go on these book tours? Because from what I gather and what I've seen, it looks like you don't really have your wings clipped as if you were a singer in a band. You get wired right in.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because like yourself, you know, you reach a certain age and you've travelled the country, but you kind of know people everywhere. And like, you know, you see your Glasgow. Maybe it wasn't the greatest decision to do the first night of the book tour in Glasgow. So it was just...
You've learned nothing.
I know. We should have started somewhere gentler. So that was a fairly harsh intro. Yeah. But, you know, you're there for one night and it's people you don't see very often, so it's hard. You know, you always tell yourself, I'll have a couple of drinks and go back to the hotel early.
But yeah, the next thing your pants are on back to front and you're doing the lambada with Stuart McCorry.
On a train to the wrong city with Andy Weatherall.
This came as a surprise to me, Niv, because I didn't know you were writing this, to be completely honest, right? So when I heard it was coming out, I was excited, but also, like, it's a big thing because the book's revered and loved by so many people.
Not for me to say, but I'd like to think it is. It's always, yeah, it's kind of nerve-wracking. You feel a responsibility to, you know, not defile or degrade the character. Yeah. He does all the defiling and degrading in the book. But it just seemed, I'd thought for a while I'd quite like to do something more with Stealth Fox. It seems like in the times we're living in right now, the last few years, you know, it seemed like a really good way to talk about the lunacy of Brexit and Trump and everything we're living through just now. There's a really boring preachy novel to be written about all that, so I thought it was more fun to do it from the point of view of a guy like Stealth Fox who thinks it's all fantastic. Yeah. He can't get enough of it because his thing in A&R was always the lowest common denominator. You know, he loved big cheesy pop hits. He wasn't interested in sort of, you know, what One Hunchback Man records in Inverness were putting out with their kind of folk actors. He didn't care about indie music. He wanted the big, you know, hits. So it seems to me now the idea of the lowest common denominator is exactly where Trump works from, you know. H.L. Mencken had a famous quote saying that it has always been known that you could win the presidency by appealing to the worst morons in American society. Yeah. But nobody had the, you know, brass neck to ever do it.
But I think there's extreme characters everywhere you look at the moment. Yeah. And Stealth Fox is one of them.
Yeah.
And what a brilliant vehicle to get torn in about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been thoroughly enjoyable, but how do you edit yourself then when you've got a character like that? Do you ever get to the point where you think, this is too extreme, I can't put that in?
I never think that, certainly. No. Yeah, I think you know that. But my editor, well, Jason will pull back in the stick here and there and say, do you need to go here? So there's a couple of the subplot view of this book involves a very famous pop star called Lucius Dupre.
So this is a new character now.
He's the reason Stealth Fox comes back into action is he's rich beyond dreams. He's worth $200 or $300 million, but of course he's convinced he's poor because he's hanging out with billionaires now. And he works occasionally as a consultant if something's interesting to him. And his old friend James Trelick from the first book is chairman of a company in a record company in America. And there's this character, Lucius Dupre, who is modelled on certain pop stars that might be familiar to the audience. Let's just say he has a giant ranch called Narnia outside Los Angeles, and he has interests that might be described as unhealthy.
Right.
And that have left him open to blackmail. And if he goes down, it's going to bring the record scandal be so huge it'll bring the record company down.
Yeah.
So Trelly asks Stealth Fox, can you help me? I know what we're going to do here. And of course, Stealth Fox's initial thought is, let's just kill him. But then he has the thought that, you know, the supermarket tabloid rumours that Elvis never died. back in the day. You know, Elvis is living in Thailand and Elvis is living in Texas. Still, Fox, what if that was true? What if Elvis had just come back from nowhere 6 months after he died? Yeah. And what if you were Colonel Tom Parker, you were RCA? How much money would you have made? So he says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to fake his death, fan him off to live somewhere quietly for 6 months, and then we're going to bring him back and make all the money in the world. And of course, everyone around him says, that's insane. The magnitude of the lie. Yeah. We can't do it. And Still Fox points to the TV set where there's Trump talking about his inauguration being the biggest in history. And he says, you guys don't get it. We're beyond all that now. It's the time of the big lie. The bigger, the better. As long as you just repeat it with enough conviction, loudly enough, with a straight face, over and over, what's going to happen? Yeah, nothing. Yeah. There's no accountability.
20 years on from Kill Your Friends, Kill 'Em All is out now, and there's more from John Niven in just a wee second.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Foo Fighters have ticked most of the live boxes for a huge rock and roll band. Think Glastonbury, Wembley, Reading and Leeds, just the UK highlights as well. They've done loads around the globe. But there is one thing left on home soil that they haven't done. The Super Bowl, probably the biggest gig you can do as a band, quite lucrative as well, if you can think about it that way. Anyway, Dave Grohl's revealed that he's been asked to do it countless times. So he said, I've had multiple conversations over the years with him where they say, we want to have a rock and roll band. Do you think you could do it? Do you think you could do a stadium? And he was like, yes, we do it all the time. Anyway, for years, David Grohl has been expecting a big call-up, as you can imagine, after those conversations. But he wasn't best pleased, from what I gather, when he saw Madonna doing it, then Katy Perry doing it, and no sign of genuine rock and roll stars. Now, here's the rub. Here's the thing. There's a pretty good reason for it. And Mr. Grohl explained, I actually got really hammered at a party in France once and got to meet the dude that does the Super Bowl thing. I was like, don't want to do the Super Bowl. I used to want to do it. Now I don't want to do it anymore. And then Taylor Hawkins, the drummer, he put the boot into the favourites as well, which doesn't really help. So Maroon 5 are tipped to do it. Taylor Hawkins said, not to be negative on Maroon 5, but the Super Bowl always seems to be the final chapter in your career.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
John Niven is here, a brilliant author. He wrote Kill Your Friends, he got Kill 'Em All Out, a book that I just finished off a few months ago now, No Good Deed, which I absolutely loved, Niven.
Oh, thank you.
It was brilliant. I feel really embarrassed that I never got to finish it the last time we spoke, but it just reminded me terribly of how much of you and how much of me and all the people we knock around with is in that book.
Yeah, fair bit. It's got to be a certain age.
Reached that point in life. If we can try and relate your book to music, and I always try and do this, right? We ask a lot of bands what they would have been called if a conversation had gone differently in the pub when they were deciding the name. Was there ever another name for Kill Your Friends?
Oh yeah, there's a couple, yeah. That title came quite late in the day. Originally the book was called Unrecouped, because I rather grandly thought that's what the character's soul was. Yeah. But of course, you talk to MD outside the record and the
recuperable
expression
costs.
Unrecouped, so what does that even mean, you know? And then it was quite late in the day, Kill Your Friends came to me. It's actually from a movie called Swimming with Sharks. It says at one point, you know, out here in Hollywood, it's, you know, screw your family, kill your friends, and maybe kill your family, screw your friends, and have a nice day.
Yeah.
But then since then, you know, people get in touch and they say, did you take it from? I think there's a line in Aztec Camera's Oblivious, I see you crying and I want to kill your friends. And then Kurt Cobain, I think, changed the lyrics to Teen Spirit to load up on guns and kill your friends on Top of the Pops when they did it. So it's been used here and there. But as soon as I had that title and I said to the publishers, they were like, that's it, you know. Yeah.
How do you keep these little phrases in your head, these little quotes and things that stick with you? Do you keep a little notebook like Alan Bennett and
You've always got a notebook, but I've got an alarming capacity to remember things like crap dialogue. You'll be sitting in something like Aliens 3 will be on the telly and I'll know every word of it, and Charlotte will go, this is like the devil talking. How do you do that?
Yeah, I've got a good one for you, actually. Harold Macmillan said, nothing rolls up as quickly as the red carpet. And Niv, you've been, you know, you've had a really good run at it the last, 10 years since Kill Your Friends came out.
Yep.
Does it change your work ethic a wee bit, and how much effort you have to put in it when you've got success? And, you know, you could quite easily spend a lot more time sort of dossing around having a good time.
I think a wee bit, in that to me it felt like I was quite a late starter. I was 35 when I wrote the first draft of what became Kill Your Friends in 1989 when it was published. Right. So to me, it felt like I was starting quite late. So I think when you get an opportunity, you kind of you get your teeth into it a wee bit. And I've always had, I still have that thing of, as soon as I finish the last book, I'll make a start on the next one.
Because yeah.
I've been lucky that I've always known what the next book's going to be so far. And this is the novel I'm working on now is my 10th.
Right.
So I think it's that kind of fear of somebody's going to take it away from you if you don't just relentlessly keep working, you know?
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Tom Smith is here. He's battling through. He's, I'm sensing maybe just a little bit fragile today.
Something like that, yeah.
On a scale of 0 to 10, where is it?
Oh, it's not that, but it's just, like I said, it's just because I'm out of practice.
He's out of practice.
We've been off tour for a couple of weeks. I've been home. I'm out of the groove.
You've got a couple of weeks to get up to speed. How well do you behave yourself? Because as a singer, you have to have your wings clipped slightly, don't
on
you?
Tour,
because you have to keep your voice in good shape. Are you sensible?
I am, actually. Yeah. I mean, if there's a day, we normally do two or three shows, day off. So on that third day, then I'll have some fun.
Yeah.
Because I really suffer the next night if I have fun when I shouldn't.
Good man. He knows now, he's a veteran. It's the most Googled thing about you, actually. If you put editors in, it's your voice that comes up.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's the most Googled thing that's talked about on editors.
Just
the delivery, the style, it's a trademark thing, isn't it? But what is the secret to keeping it in good shape? Because on the latest single, Cold, there's a bit of falsetto in there as well.
Yeah, I've just, over the years, tried to just explore my voice and do things in a different way.
Yeah.
When I write, like if I'm putting things in a different pitch melodically, it'll take me somewhere different. So I like that. I like the feeling of doing something different. So, I mean, just luck really. Over the years, I do it a lot. You know, it's what I do.
Have you got a routine to look after? I remember seeing Chris Martin warming up with a wallpaper stripper of all things. You know, puts it across. You know, the thing that you strip wallpaper off,
like
a steamer.
It was like, I think, if you're feeling a bit rough, steam can be good. But no, when we toured with REM, I always remember Michael Sykes had a glass of wine and a fag, and then he went on stage. So,
that's brilliant!
And his voice was better than anyone else's. So, yeah,
magical advice from. maybe we should be. There's got to be some kind of health disclaimer with that. Yeah, maybe don't do that, kids. In the modern age.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Tom, I've got to ask you about the experience in Hyde Park with The Cure. It was a massive night. You bumped into the producer, Vin. I had to go back to Scotland. I missed it. I was in the huff for about 3 weeks about it. But it sounded like an incredible evening.
It was a brilliant brilliant day. Because there was a little bit of stress beforehand, because we were on at the exact same time as the England game, which was, I think, the quarter-final.
Yes.
So there was a little bit of like, oh, here we go. You know, we've not been lucky here. But it was amazing. It was we had a great show. Sun was out. There was loads of people there.
I mean, it was the sun just wasn't out. It was an amazingly warm night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was full on. Yeah. It was a hot day. And then obviously the bill was brilliant. But yeah, so we had a good show. But what was perfect about the evening was standing with my mates watching The Cure, and I'd not seen it before.
Wow.
And they were astonishing. Yeah, really, they were on such great form. And the set was like quite streamlined. It was mainly just hits. Really, it was a bit shorter than they'd usually play for. And it was in Hyde Park, the sun was out, and it was just wonderful.
Did you get a chance to speak to Robert Smith?
I didn't get a chance to speak to Robert Smith, but some of the band did afterwards, but I'd had too much of a good time when I got home.
this is the theme. This wasn't meant to happen. But did they tell you what he was saying? You know, did he offer any words of encouragement or advice or anything like that?
Elliot, our he plays keyboards and guitar in the band. He is just an enormous fanboy, you'd say, and more than a fan, you know. So he spent a little time just kind of, and then there's a photo, and all he's doing is just kind of cuddling him, just like holding Robert Smith, just kind of gazing at him. So I don't think he can really remember what was said. It was just shock from meeting the man, you know.
What an amazing memory to have, Tom, amongst many others.
It's good.
One other thing before you go, right?
Yeah.
We've been asking a lot of bands about the names we don't know about. Right, so when you were discussing the editors, there were a few, two or three other names I think you had at the time. Pilot, Pride, Snowfield.
Yeah, we were very nearly called Snowfield.
That's a good name.
When we were Snowfield, we started to get attention, and it was just as we started to realise we were going to get a record deal, we kind of sat down and went, I don't think we really like this name enough. So, but there's no other names that people... Yeah, those are the ones. They're
really?
Quite, you know, you Googled it.
There's not any other secret ones there?
No. No, it's those four...
I always love that.
The Pride, did you say that?
Yes, the Pride was in there,
yeah.
Good names. They were all, I think they were all
good
names.
That's kind of you.
I think they're all reasonable names.
Well, they're all available if anybody, you know.
Here's the question. Do you think things would have worked out differently had you been called? Snowfield?
Probably not. I mean, is it that important, really? I mean, the name, like, after a while, you know, the name just becomes attached to the music. Do you know what I mean? The meaning of the word, or it kind of, it goes away after a while if the song's good enough, you know. Who knows?
It's a decent pearl of wisdom for any band listening right now. Don't worry if you are called Ape Goes West, like the Kooks.
You have to like it. Was that what it's
called? They were called Ape Goes West.
Ape Goes West.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I think things things would have worked out differently for them. I think Tom, it's always such a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Radio X. Gordon Smart. Radio X. The
Evening Show. Classic album of the week. X. Oh, it's a cracker this week. Our classic album, Paul Weller, second solo album, Wildwood. It was from September 1993. That's when it was released. So that's 25 years old, almost to the day. Incredible. And now, just to give you a little idea of how much it means to me, I remember having an argument about pocket money when I was 13 years old, so I could afford to buy it because it was £15.99, pretty sure, in HMV at the time. So if you're listening right now and you just buy your Spotify or you buy a record every now and again, £15.99, that's how much it cost for a good album back then. I feel old. I feel like an old man explaining that story. It went to number two of the charts, has since gone platinum. It was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize right at the very beginning. I think it was about the third Mercury Prize around then. It includes songs like Sunflower, Wildwood, which is the title track, of course, Can You Heal Us, Has My Fire Really Gone Out, and plenty more. I listened to it this afternoon to remind myself of it, and it really is a brilliant album. Q Magazine agree. They've placed it as one of the 100 greatest British albums ever, and it's definitely a stalwart in Weller's back catalogue. We saw him playing down at Victorious in Portsmouth just a couple of months back now, and it was a really special moment when he played Sunflower, just as the sun was going down. It was class. Steve Craddock and Simon Fowler, you remember those names? Ocean Colour Scene, they both appear on the album, and Craddock went on to tour with Weller and still plays in his band today. And talk about having an ear and an eye for talent, Weller spotted those guys before Ocean Colour Scene even had a single out. It's the kind of guy he was, right? The album itself emerged from those sessions with Steve Craddock and a few other brilliant musicians as well who were kicking around at the time. Damon Minghella, who's a great bass player, you'll have seen him, and Steve White as well. Weller was feeling confident after the success of his first solo album and decided to record as much as music as possible straight away. And Wildwood, well, that was the result of all those sessions. Now, how about this? This is great. Weller himself has got a long, long list of credits on this album. Here we go. Vocals, guitar, mellotron, Moog, piano, Hammond organ, bass, hand claps. It's not a bad gig, is it? Getting a credit for that, Mr. Weller. Percussion, Hammond organ, the Wurlitzer, which I thought, or the Wurlitzer, which I thought was just a jukebox. It's not, it's also an organ. Tambourine, acoustic guitar, strings, blues, harp, and lead guitar. He was a busy boy. So let's get into it. Two of the brilliant songs from that amazing album, Wildwood, 25 years old. Wildwood first, followed by the epic Sunflower. The Evening Show, classic album of the week. X.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart. The Evening Show, classic album of the week. X.
Oh, it was pretty special, wasn't it? Listening to the Sunflower there. From the album Wildwood, September 1993, that came out. Me and producer Vin just talking about the musicianship. Magical stuff. So Sunflower, that was the first single from the album, seen by many Weller fans as the high point of the album and the conclusion of Weller's newfound soul influences, really marrying his own solo sound. Wildwood before that as well. It's a classic Weller track, isn't it? The title track went to number 14 in the charts. But did you know it was a massive hit in Holland? There you have it. The song you hear in the background, listen to that. I can tell you that's right up producer Vin Street. Instrumental part one of two instrumentals placed across the album. Beautiful stuff. I think that inspired Mr. Noel Gallagher. Chucked a couple of those little things into Oasis albums over the years, didn't he? Not quite as funky though. Right, there was a two-disc deluxe version which came out in 2007. I've got that as well. Real prized possession. Featured a remix of Wildwood, some live tracks, demos, and some more bonus songs as well. It's a real collector's item. A year later, Mr. Paul Weller released his first solo live album called Live Wood. It features some tunes from Wildwood performed in London, Wolves, Amsterdam and Brussels. There's a Holland connection in there again. And one thing I'll always remember from that, it's not on this album, but here's this beautiful song called Butterfly Collector, which is a jam B-side. If you've never heard it before, there's a bit of homework for you. It is magical. Do you want to listen to more of that instrumental? Trying to drag it out a little bit. Right, another classic album coming next week.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Manic Street Preachers on Radio X. They're friends of author John Niven. You know, for the first time this year, I got Manics in. James Dean Bradfield and Nicky Wire. Never interviewed them before. They were world class. They were brilliant.
The pros, aren't they? Oh, they
I mean, Nicky, he came out with a line about it was a miasma of digital hysteria. I was like, there's your next album.
Nicky's a quote machine, isn't he?
Unbelievable. But you, like you say, you did a night with them the other night on the book tour. What's the dynamic when you're on stage with them? What do you do?
With James? James prepares really well. Right. You know, he will prepare thoroughly. A lot of people just rock up and sort of wing it. But right. James is he's always well prepared, as you can imagine. You know?
Yeah, he's a very articulate man.
Working. And also, James is one of those guys, he's incredibly well read. You know, right. he's got that working class thing of that he didn't go to university, but he's better read than 95% of the people I know who did, you know.
Yeah, it's fascinating to talk to him. I got a great lecture in the history of the Labour Party when he was talking about his new album, Resistance is Futile.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting gadge.
Yeah.
Now, Niv, last time you were in, I asked you about Slash Gordon, which is the terrible book I'm putting together, which will be my debut novel. Slash Gordon, great pun. Toilet reading. But it's about famous visits to the bathroom with awkward encounters. And you gave us a beauty last time about Sylvester Stallone. But given the life you lead, have you had any more awkward encounters in the bathroom you can share with us for Slash Gordon?
I did have one. I mean, it's almost unremarkable in that it took place at the Chateau Marmont in Los Angeles, where if you're not at the urinal next to a celebrity, something's going far wrong. But again, I looked up to see that relieving himself next to me was Christoph Waltz.
Wow.
Who... smiled politely at me, but it was just like, this is the Nazi from Inglourious Basterds having a massive pee.
Nice.
So that's the best.
He's a brilliant actor, isn't he?
He's very good, but he looks terrifying.
Did you slap an arm around his shoulders and say, now listen, kill your friends too, kill them all? I'm looking for Nicholas Hoult's dad.
No, I didn't. You never accost another man in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, the other one I had recently. Can I do
no,
two?
Dude, listen. Yes.
The other one I had recently, another film premiere thing's a turn round. This was literally at the urinal. Shooting McGavin from Happy Gilmore.
Oh, no way. I watched that with my wee boy for the first time of the night. That's probably
really
responsible.
I can't remember the actor's name who plays him.
It's a surreal world.
Shooting McGavin.
The guys here all work with Johnny Vaughan, who's a big part of Kill Your Friends.
He was indeed, yeah.
Will you have another go again for a film for Kill 'Em All?
We'll have to see. I mean, I think there's a couple of aspects of this novel that would be challenging to represent in cinema. But, well, you know, you never know. As always, these things, it just takes the right director or the right actor to show interest, hopefully.
In Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they managed to train squirrels to eat chocolate. So if they can do that, I'm sure some of the nefarious antics in your books could be turned to real life. Niv, it's great to see you, man. I'd like you to stay longer and talk forever. You know,
I've always enjoyed being here, Gordon. You know that.
You're one of those gadgets. And you know, you mentioned earlier on that Irvin's looking really healthy at the moment. You're looking well as well. I'm pleased to see that.
Well, thank you. We're doing all right after a week in the road. So, I'll probably be dead by next week.
You know, say, Sunday afternoon conversation. How is the gout?
the gout, I hate getting asked that, Gordon. I'm looking for wood to touch. I'm in a completely artificial environment. There's no wood around me. Touch wood, it's all right at the minute.
Yeah, probably. I was going to bring you some cherry juice just to make sure. Just in case.
I love that my gout amuses you. Sort of this Henry VIII affliction that's quite...
It's the king's disease.
It is.
I love that, Niv.
It's agony. But, you know, it's fine at the moment.
Great stuff. John Niven, his book, Kill 'Em All, is out now. It's absolutely phenomenal, I'm sure. I've not read it yet, but I know it's going to be good, Niv.
Well, you're very kind. Radio X.